reverie, the state of being pleasantly lost in one's thoughts, a daydream. But what if those daydreams turn to nightmares? Reverie True Crime shines a light on the dark tragedies that have happened and are continuing to happen all throughout the world. We interview and work with families to bring awareness to forms of injustice. We explore the depths of cases from around the world to include missing persons, mysteries, and more. Reverie True Crime is found wherever you're listening to this podcast. Remember, you don't have to live in fear, but stay aware of your surroundings. Stay safe and take care.
Oh my God, she was murdered.
It was a murder? What kind of injury?
I'm on the phone with state police right now.
At around 8 a.m. on the 19th of December 2016, a couple from Raymond Drive in the Laurel Lake section of Commercial Township in New Jersey were awoken by a loud banging to their front door. They wiped the sleep from their eyes and walked down the stairs to the front door. They opened it up and were perplexed to see their neighbor's young son, who exclaimed that his mother was dead. Growing up, Tara O'Shea Watson was always there for her family when they needed her. She dutifully took on the role of the older cousin of the family and ferried her younger cousin, Brian Dunn, and his friends to and from the Franklinville skating rink and to the mall. She always made sure to go out of her way to make sure that people were happy. In 2005, Tara was living in Cedarville in New Jersey when she met Jeremiah Monell. By this point, Tara had three children from prior relationships, two who lived with their father, and then another child that she had when she was just 17 years old, who was living with Tara's mother, Emily. The couple went on to have two children, Jeremiah, who was born in 2004, and Sarah, who was born in 2011. Tara was described by those who knew her as an amazing mother, amazing friend, and an amazing daughter. Her friend, Jen Messick, stated, "She was so kind and caring. She would give you her last dollar if it meant helping you." Tara was known for her friendly demeanor, and she always put her loved ones in front of herself. Each morning, Tara woke up early to make breakfast for her children before they set off for school. While Tara always displayed compassion for her loved ones, behind closed doors she was struggling. As soon as she entered the relationship with Monell, he began abusing her. The relationship between Tara and Monell was tumultuous. Tara had shown up at her friends' homes on numerous occasions, bruised and bloodied, and looking for refuge. Monell would throw into a rage about any minor thing, even if Tara was speaking with a family member on the phone. Her cousin, Brian Dunn, said to the press of Atlantic City, "He wouldn't let her go anywhere. Anytime I would call her, he would tell her to hang up." Monell would always promise that he was going to change, and Tara was always hopeful that he would. For years, Tara had been trying to leave the abusive relationship, and finally, in 2016, she did. Monell moved out of the family home, and it was just Tara, Jeremiah, and Sarah, living alone and making it work. But still, Manel was never too far away. Since he was the father of Jeremiah and Sarah, he still had a right to see the children. They would spend every Friday through Sunday with Manel at his father's home in Malaga. They were driven there and then collected by their mother Tara. On the 26th of April 2016, Tara was at home with her two children when Manel broke in and proceeded to physically assault her. In the process, Manel smashed glass and injured Tara's neck and nose before fleeing from the scene. In August, a grand jury indicted Manel for second-degree burglary and fourth-degree criminal contempt. The criminal contempt charge was for violating the Prevention of Domestic Violence Act. However, in November, these charges against Manel were dropped. The reason they were dropped was because Tara had requested that they be dropped. It's very common for victims of domestic violence to seek the dismissal of charges against their abusers due to the overwhelming sense of fear that they feel, especially of the consequences and repercussions of the charges. In fact, in 2014 alone, almost 80% of 43,000 municipal criminal domestic violence complaints were dismissed. While Tara had requested that the charges be dropped, a restraining order still stood. Tara confided in her friends that she wanted to move to Tennessee with Jeremiah and Sarah so that they could finally break away from Manel for good. Unfortunately, however, a judge prohibited her from moving out of the state with the children. Her friend Penny commented, "We all told her to run away, to go away." Her friend Jen then added, "It was living hell. He beat her. She was constantly on the run from him. She wanted nothing more than to get out of here." It was a quiet night on Raymond Drive on the 18th of December, 2015. Tara's 12-year-old son, Jeremiah, awoke in the middle of the night by the sound of a loud bang on the door. He then heard his mother scream, "Ow!" Jeremiah slowly got out of bed and opened up his bedroom door to find the source of the sound. Jeremiah peered outside to see his father Manel and his mother Tara in the living room. He watched on in silence as Manel slammed Tara onto the ground. He then jumped on top of her and began choking her. Their son Jeremiah was frozen in fear as he heard his mother say, "Just let me die in peace." Manel then jumped up off Tara and ran into the kitchen. He returned to the living room, where Tara lay injured on the floor. Manel was now armed with two kitchen knives from the kitchen. Jeremiah watched on in fear as Manel brutally attacked Tara with the two weapons. When Manel was finished, he turned around to see his son standing there, sobbing. He chillingly said, "You shouldn't have seen that." Manel then ordered his son back into his bedroom, and afterwards, he fled from the home. Jeremiah spent the entire night sobbing in his bedroom. Early the next morning, Jeremiah sought out help. He woke up his younger sister, and they both ran to their neighbour's home and pounded on the front door. As soon as the neighbour, Crystal Greer, opened up, Jeremiah exclaimed, "Mommy's dead. Daddy killed her." Crystal's husband immediately called 911 as they made their way over to Tara's home, stopping to grab their neighbour, Glenn Atchison, who was a paramedic. The front door of Tara's home was unlocked.
911, where's your emergency?
Yes, I need a state trooper over here at 7901 Henry Street.
Okay, is it Henry Street you said? Is that in Commercial Township?
Yes.
Okay, what's going on there?
My wife's best friend's son just came down to my house talking about his mom's dead. Just woke me and my wife up to have a sound sleep. My wife is inside right now checking on her to see if she's okay.
Okay, 7901 Henry Street, you said what's going on exactly?
My wife's best friend's son, best friend, her son just came down to my house saying his mother is dead.
Is dead?
Yes.
Okay, and are you there? Can you see if she's breathing?
My wife is inside right now. I'm walking through. I'm not touching anything just in case.
Right.
As Crystal's husband spoke with the 911 operator, they came across Tara. She was lying on the floor in the living room, wrapped up in a blanket that was emblazoned with two princesses from Disney's movie Frozen. Glenn pulled back the blanket enough to see Tara's face. He found that she was cold to the touch.
Do you know how old she is?
How old is she is dead?
Okay, but do you know how old she was?
How old is she, hon? I know she's in her 30s.
And what's your name, sir?
Yes.
Okay.
And 35 is her age.
35, and they just found her?
Yeah, my wife just found her on the living room floor.
Okay. All right,
her ex-husband was over here last night doing brake line work on her truck.
Okay. And injuries to her that you can see, or is she just...
Is there any injuries can you see?
I don't want to touch her.
My wife doesn't want to touch her.
Okay.
She's covered up in a blanket.
Okay, so it looks like she may have passed in her sleep?
Yeah.
Okay, but there's no, like, any injuries to her, no blood anywhere, right?
I don't see any blood.
Okay.
At first, the neighbors wondered whether Tara had died in her sleep. However, Crystal's husband's voice quickly became more frantic, as it dawned on him that this was no accident.
Oh my God, she was murdered.
It was a murder? What kind of injuries?
I'm on the phone with state police right now.
Okay, what kind of injuries does she have, sir? All right, sir, hold on one second.
I need state trooper out here now.
All right, calm down. I'm going to connect to state police right now.
Hold on one second. No.
911, where's your
state police, Cumberland County. He's at 7901 Henry Street. He says that he just found a 35-year-old female in bed. It appears that she was murdered in her sleep.
Sorry, that's 7901 Henry Street, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And what's your first name? And who is this female?
This is a friend of my friend.
And she was staying there overnight?
This was her home.
Her home? Okay.
Her home, yes.
Glenn later recalled, I went to reach for her pulse in the carotid area and my finger went into a gaping hole. Police and paramedics descended on the family home. The three first officers to arrive were State Police Sergeant John D. Hart, Detective Sergeant Eric Crane, and Detective Michael Hughes. They approached the living room, which was brightly decorated for Christmas, and then observed Tara's body underneath the blanket. After surveying the scene, one of the officers slowly pulled back the blanket. Police Sergeant DeHart recalled.
So Detective Sergeant Crane pulled a portion of the blanket up so I could see the victim.
Can you describe what you observed at that time?
At that time, as he removed it, I saw a white female that had a cut to her neck and multiple puncture wounds that appeared to be on her torso. I also observed a small portion of blood underneath the body.
Tara was pronounced dead at the scene. She had been stabbed multiple times in the abdomen, chest, back, and face. She had been stabbed around 90 times. One stab wound to Tara's throat cut all the way back to her spine. It had completely cut through her jugular vein, trachea, and esophagus. Jeremiah told investigators that the day before his mother was killed, his father had come over to the home to do some brake line work on her truck. He had shown up when Jeremiah was home alone. He said that his mother and Sarah arrived home sometime later. The atmosphere was tense. That same day, two other neighbours had seen Manel cursing at and assaulting Tara. Just a couple of hours after Tara was pronounced dead, Investigators announced that they were charging Manel with her murder. But there was a problem. He couldn't be found. Investigators asked the public to keep an eye out for Manel and contact them if they spotted him or knew anything about where he could possibly be. He was described as standing at around 5 feet 9 inches tall and weighing around 140 pounds. He was last seen driving a 1994 blue Chevrolet S10 with a New Jersey license plate. The following day, Manel's truck was discovered by some railroad tracks near a wooded area, off Sawmill Road in Cedarville, in Lawrence Township.
We were informed by our aviation unit that Mr. Manel's vehicle was found in the woods. That was the blue Chevy S10 pickup truck. Multiple detectives went out to the area to search the immediate area for Mr. Manel after finding that vehicle.
Investigators fanned out in search of the woodland and called in a police helicopter that hovered low above the tree canopy. The search was unfruitful, and investigators could find no sign of Manel. Trooper Lawrence Peel stated in the media that Manel could be just about anywhere, and he told the public not to approach him if they saw him. He stated, "Manel should be considered dangerous. Whether or not he's armed is yet to be determined." As the search for Manel was on, a makeshift memorial began to grow outside Tara's home. A handful of signs were placed along the fence outside the home. One of them read, "In loving memory of Tara O'Shea," while another referred to her as a wonderful daughter, mother, and friend, gone but not forgotten. The signs were surrounded in candles as well as teddy bears. The memorial was contrasted by the Christmas decorations that were draped over the fence and a children's playhouse which sat nearby, both poignant reminders of what had been taken from the family. A GoFundMe was established to raise money for Tara's funeral, as well as to raise money to purchase some gifts for her children for Christmas. By Wednesday morning, it had reached over $4,000. The Incredible Bulk Store, located on North High Street in Millville, also announced that they were serving as a collection point for gifts for the children. They were also accepting gift cards and cash. The store owner, Dave Vanneman, typically used the store as a drop-off point for items for the local Code Blue organization. But when he heard about the tragic murder of Tara, he wanted to help in any way possible. Members of the community came to the store in droves. By the afternoon, the entire shop floor was filled with toys, books, dolls, and games. Somebody even donated a brand new bicycle. Workers at Bob Novick Chevrolet in Bridgeton donated $200 in gift cards. Other businesses followed suit, with Top Dog Pizza in Millville donating 25% of their proceeds to help the children. That evening, the community gathered outside Tara's home for a candlelight vigil. Her family huddled together under the cool winter air. As her mother, Emily O'Shea, said, "We need peace in this world. This needs to stop." Over 100 people attended the vigil, and they shared fond memories of Tara. Her friend, Robin Woody, was wearing a purple sweatshirt with Tara's face emblazoned on the back, alongside the words, "You're as free as a butterfly, high soldier, until we meet again." Purple is the colour of domestic violence awareness, and the message of the vigil was clear. Domestic violence is an ongoing problem that plagues villages, towns, and cities all across the world. Tara's mother said to the crowd, "Let us be the voice. Let us speak for her. How many of you, truthfully, at one time in your life was a victim?" More than a dozen hands shot up in the air, as women confirmed that they too had been victims of domestic violence. Emily then lifted up a little girl in the crowd and said, "It takes a community to raise our children. It takes a community to protect our children. Protect our children. You're a special little girl because you're going to grow up to be a princess. Just like you. just like you, and just like you, she said as she pointed to other girls in the front of the crowd. The crowd of people affixed purple ribbons to the trees in Tara's yard, and then shared some fond memories of her. Her loved one spoke of a list of things that Tara wanted to do, such as cleaning up Laurel Lake, partying instead of crying, and seeing her cousin Brian in a dress. The crowd then erupted into laughter, before the mood fell somber again. Even through the laughs, the reminder that Tara had been taken from the world in such a cruel manner couldn't be shaken. Did you know that property crimes, such as burglaries and package thefts, spike over the winter? That's why now is the best time to secure your home with award-winning Home Security. SimpliSafe is the home security system that I always recommend, and I think that you should start the new year with greater peace of mind and safety for you and your family. I love SimpliSafe because I know that when I'm out and get a package delivered, it's safe sitting on my doorstep as it's being watched by my SimpliSafe cameras. I used to always worry about leaving my dog Louie at home, but with SimpliSafe he's protected and I can keep an eye on him with SimpliSafe's handy app. SimpliSafe is whole home security with advanced sensors for every room, window and door, HD security cameras for inside and out, and smarter ways to detect if a threat is real. Customize the perfect system for your home in just a few minutes at simplisafe.com/morbidology. Go today and claim a free indoor security camera plus 20% off your order with interactive monitoring. That's simplisafe.com/morbidology. There's no safe like SimpliSafe. The following morning, the search for Manel entered its third day, and investigators were back at the wooded area where his truck was found. The longer Manel stayed elusive, the more concerned the community got. At night, people were double-checking that their windows and doors were locked. As one Cedarville local, Steelman Peterson, said, "You have to worry with someone like that running around." At around 7:30 a.m. on Christmas Eve, Trooper Lawrence Peel announced a $1,000 reward for information regarding Manel's whereabouts. He said that the size of the reward offered will depend on the amount available for rewards. He stated, "It's a shame we have to give incentives for something like this, but every little helps." It was a grim Christmas for Tara's loved ones, as Manel still remained on the run. Christmas came and went with no new developments, and on the 27th of December, the reward fund was increased to $3,500. The $2,500 was put forward by the Cumberland County Prosecutor's Office. The new year broke on the 1st of January 2017. It was a quiet afternoon for staff at Angelo's Pizzeria in Liberty Square Shopping Centre, off Route 322 in Folsom, which is a small borough in Atlantic County, around 30 miles away from Commercial Township. At around 2:45 p.m., however, one of the workers saw somebody who matched Manel's description in a patch of woodland behind the shopping centre. The woodland is laced with walking trails, and it's a known popular haunt for homeless people. Police descended on the scene and began their search for Manel. They found him relatively quickly. He was camping out in a tent in the woodland, and it was apparent that he had been hiding out here since Tara's murder. Investigators immediately contacted all of Tara's loved ones. He felt an overwhelming sense of relief that Manel was finally off the streets. Tara's friend Penny commented, "I literally fell to my knees, crying in the middle of the casino. They got him. They got him. I didn't care where I was." She then commented, "The bad part is that New Jersey doesn't have the death penalty." Tara's friend Jen provided a statement on behalf of her family. She stated, "I would like to say on behalf of Tara O'Shea's family and friends, we are extremely grateful for the hard work and dedication of the New Jersey State Police and everyone that helped catch Manel. We pray for justice in this case and Tara's story to live on." Just the day after the arrest, Manel appeared in court via video link. The only time he spoke other than to confirm his name was when the judge asked him if he was going to apply for a public defender. He replied, "Not from inside here." Following the brief court hearing, Brian revealed that the family held the justice system partly to blame for her murder. He said that Tara had wanted to leave New Jersey to live with family in Tennessee, but the court had required her two youngest children to remain in the state, since that's where their father was. He stated, she wasn't going to leave them behind. Brian was right in the comments he was making. Tara had done all the right things that is required when it comes to escaping a relationship plagued with domestic violence. She had filed a temporary restraining order and then had gone to court to get a final order to try and keep Manel away from her. But as her friend Penny Woody Morey said, a restraining order is a piece of paper that aggravates the person that they put the restraining order against. A lot of experts believe that restraining orders work, but others say that there are ways that they could be more effective, and new laws that could be put into place to better protect victims. Domestic violence is considered one of the most preventable crimes, but laws need to change for this to happen. People have suggested treating those with a restraining order, like those on probation, with electronic monitoring, and even testing for drug and alcohol abuse. That way, there would be a record for the person violating the restraining order, and police can step in before it's too late. As Robert Bianchi, a defense attorney and former prosecutor, said, when you have a person intent on harming another person, they don't care about the paper. They are intent on victimizing. And this is why we need to put teeth into the restraining orders, so we can prevent a violent act before it happens, and not just react to it after it occurs. On the 8th of January, Manel appeared in court once more, where he told the judge that he wanted to act as his own lawyer in his criminal proceedings. A week later, he appeared in court for his detention hearing. Prosecutors were arguing that Manel should not be granted bail. They argued that the crime was particularly brutal, and that Jeremiah had witnessed the entire murder. Prosecutor Mike Ostrowski said, this was a rather brutal homicide done in the presence of minors, and there, in and of itself, shows a grave risk to the community. I think that the act speaks for itself, and this was, as I stated, multiple lacerations and stab wounds into various parts of the body. While Manel was wanting to act as his own lawyer, he had a court-appointed attorney as well, Lindsay Seidel. She said to the courtroom that despite the restraining order Tara had put out on Manel, she still invited him over to her residence. Judge Kristen Jargo responded that despite this, the restraining order still needed to be honoured. He stated, even if he's invited, it doesn't matter, because the obligation that Manel has is not to the victim, but to the court. The prosecution is indicating that his inability to comply with that order, even if, hypothetically, the victim invited him over, that only establishes that he is willing to obstruct a court order. The judge ultimately opted against bail. Behind the scenes, prosecutors and Manel's defense team were working on a plea bargain. In March, Manel was offered a plea bargain that called for 30 years in prison in exchange for his guilty plea. He rejected the plea bargain and was then subsequently indicted on the murder charge. In addition to the murder charge, Manel was facing charges of unlawful possession of a weapon, contempt and possession of weapon for unlawful purposes. After he was indicted, Penny commented, I don't think he should ever see the outside of a jail cell, and I think it should be maximum security. He didn't just destroy her life and the kid's life. Everyone who knew Tara, he took a part of us. Penny also said that they were hoping Manel would plead guilty to prevent Jeremiah from testifying in court. As she said, no 12-year-old should ever have to be in front of a judge and say what this man did to his mother. Tara's loved ones didn't get their wish, when Manel subsequently pleaded not guilty to all of the charges against him. While he was wanting to represent himself during trial, it was decided he would be represented by public defenders. In the beginning of October, he was given another week to consider another plea deal which had been offered. He was given the opportunity to plead open, which meant that he would plead guilty, and then would be facing a sentence of anywhere between 30 years to life. His defense team made a counter-offer of 18 years in prison, but prosecutor Charles Wettstein flat-out refused this counter-offer. He stated, "This is a first-degree case involving an aggravating factor for a murder. The conditions in which this murder was committed are unwantonly vile and very violent. Given that, the state's position is that the defendant is not negotiating in good faith. The state has a very strong case." Manel was asked to consider the plea offer.
"Are you rejecting the state's offer?"
"Your Honor, once again, made my decision last time. Before I went to the window, I made my decision."
"So you want to go to trial, sir? Is that your decision?"
"You're in charge. You're leading it."
"Sir, I'm asking you what your decision is. Everybody who's been sitting here watching this knows that I'm asking you to make a decision. Your decision.
I have no choice or no decision in the matter."
"You want to go to trial,
my
sir?"
"My choices and decisions matter. I wasn't allowed.
All right, sir. Here's your decision today. Do you want to take the state's offer or do you want to go to trial? One or the other. Which do you want, sir?"
"I repeat myself again. Last time I was in court, I made my decision. Before I went to the
court." "Well, window, remind me, sir. Maybe I don't remember. What was your decision the last time you were in court?"
"The one I just stated this time."
"Which is? Do you want to go to trial? Don't play games with me, Mr. Manel."
"I'm done for the day, Your Honor."
"All right. He's going to trial."
Ultimately, he rejected the plea offer, which meant that he would be heading to trial. Before the trial could proceed, there was a pre-trial conference, during which Manel complained his defense attorney, Nathan Perry, did not have his best interests in mind, and accused him of slandering him. He stated, "If I can't have proper counsel, how do I defend myself against what you're stating right now? Unless I represent myself, but I'm not educated enough to do so." The murder trial was ready to begin on the 2nd of January 2019. During opening statements, Assistant Prosecutor Charles Wettstein described the discovery of Tara's body underneath the blanket in the living room.
"And upon going into the house, they discovered the horror that had occurred. Tara wasn't just dead. She had been brutally and mercilessly murdered. They found that out when they go in. Tara's lying there on the floor. There's a blanket covering her. The corner of the blanket is pulled back. They see her face spattered with blood, a gaping wound in her neck."
Defense attorney Joe Ellen Jones asked the jury to listen intently and analyze everything that is being said during the trial, and to then determine whether it made sense. She proclaimed Manel's innocence, stating, "You're going to be left with more questions than answers. All the pieces won't neatly fit into a puzzle and give you the picture that the government just painted for you." In addition to the murder being witnessed by Tara and Manel's own son, there was forensic evidence linking him to the murder. His bloody palm print had been found on one of the knives that was covered in Tara's blood. The knife had been found behind the kitchen stove. The knife was found alongside a second bloody knife, and the two knives were presented to the jury during the trial. The larger of the two knives was significantly bent, while the tip of the smaller knife was also damaged. State Police Detective Sergeant Eric Crane, a crime scene investigator, testified that when he examined the knives, he found 25 points of comparison that proved a match for Manel's palm print. During cross-examination, Defense attorney Perry asked if the print could have been made in blood that was already on the handle. He asked, "It's a matter of common sense. If there's blood on a steel handle and you grab it, it's going to leave a print, right?" Detective Sergeant Crane replied, "That's not correct, sir. No." He said that the print on the knife handle would not have been made by somebody putting their hand on the knife after it already had blood on the handle, but instead by somebody who already had blood on their hand making contact with the knife. A pair of blood-stained jeans were also entered into evidence. These jeans were men's jeans, and they were found in the bedroom. They contained large amounts of blood, and the blood spatter indicated that the jeans were in direct contact at the time the blood was shed. Detective Hughes stated, "I believe that the stains were on the right front leg portion of the jeans. They're in a position where a hand would fall, a bloody hand. It appeared to be the relative size and shape of someone wiping a bloody hand on those jeans." Other evidence included Tara's blood-soaked purple t-shirt that was emblazoned with the words, "Live, Love, Dream." Detective Hughes then spoke about a bloodstain on Tara's lower leg. He said that it showed a transfer pattern impression that had matched the profile of the smaller knife recovered in the kitchen. When Tara's body was found, there were multiple hair strands recovered from her left hand and a single strand from her right hand. State police requested that these strands of hair be tested for DNA, but the items were never tested. Detective Hughes recalled, "From what I recall, we wanted to submit those to the lab. However, the lab chose not to test those items." The most gut-wrenching moment of the trial came when Jeremiah testified as a prosecution witness. The prosecutor first of all tried to make Jeremiah feel comfortable, at least as comfortable as physically possible in such a situation.
What grade are you in right now? What are your some of your favorite classes?
English and math.
Do you participate in any sports at school?
Baseball.
Have you had any plans for any other sports coming up?
Lacrosse.
Jeremiah, what do you like to do in your spare time?
Play video games.
What kind of system do you use?
Xbox One.
Can you name some of the games that you like to play?
Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Call of Duty, Black Ops 4.
Testimony then turned to the night of the murder.
So after you saw your dad leave, you stayed in your bed. What's the next thing you remember?
I heard a huge thump, and I crawled over to my curtain peak, and I saw my mother on the floor and my father standing above her.
Do you remember hearing anything after that thump?
Yes, my mother screamed in pain because she had a back problem, and she said, "Ow."
And what was your dad doing?
He then jumped on her and pulled and started choking her.
How long do you think your dad was choking her on?
A minute, maybe less.
What happened after that period of time?
He got up and he got a knife off the fridge, a kitchen knife.
After he got up, did you hear your mom say anything?
Yes. She said, "Let me back in peace."
And where did your dad go after your mom said that?
To the kitchen to grab a knife off the fridge.
Which way did he walk to get back to the living room? Did he walk through the kitchen?
Yes.
Did you see anything in your dad's hands while he walked back to the living room?
Yes.
What did you see? About how big was that knife?
That's big.
And after he had that knife, can you describe what he did?
is that I don't know.
Can you describe what position your mother was in when your father stabbed her? How was your mother like when your dad stabbed her?
Full ground arms chopped and snuggled.
What do you remember seeing?
My father stabbed her. That's all I saw. I looked away.
Did you hear anything?
Just the gushing of him stabbing.
After a 2-week trial, it was time for closing arguments. Defense attorney Perry argued that the prosecution had failed to establish that Manel was the killer. He stated, Jeremiah Manel didn't do it. The state hasn't given you the evidence they need to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. He then questioned Jeremiah's testimony, stating that it was dark that night and that he had an obstructed view of the homicide. He then stated, was there a fight? Did Jeremiah Manel actually act in self-defense? I don't know. Those questions were left open for you to answer. Prosecutor Wettstein accused the defense team of throwing out speculation and theories. He stated, 89 sharp force injury wounds, a slash to the throat. That's purpose, pure and simple. That's murder, pure and simple. The jury were then sent off to deliberate. They deliberated for just 1 hour before returning with a verdict. They found Jeremiah Manel guilty of the murder of Tara O'Shea Watson. They also found him guilty of weapons offences. The trial then entered its sentencing phase. During the sentencing, Assistant Prosecutor Charles Wettstein said of Tara, she was ready to start a new life away from the abuse of the defendant. But the defendant was not ready to release control, and he exercised the ultimate control possible and took Tara away from her friends, from her relatives, from her mother, and from her children. The tables have turned, and the defendant has lost control. Manel's defense team were seeking a more lenient sentence, with defense attorney Perry stating that he believed that Manel had some kind of emotional and mental underlying disturbance. While during the trial he had tried to suggest that Manel was innocent, he now stated, in my conversations with Mr. Manel, I know that he is very contrite, remorseful. There's no way to unring the bell. There's no way to go back in time, Judge. But if we could do that, I think he would pursue a decidedly different course. Victim impact statements were presented, and they truly captured the loss the entire family had felt. Tara's mother, Emily, addressed Manel directly.
Jeremiah, on 12/18/16, you destroyed many lives without care in the world. You took a sister from Loretta, Timothy, Josh, Tiffany, Jonathan, Frank, Thelma, and Eddie, and Stephen. You gave heavy heart to parents, Mayor, Ed, Donald, and myself for the loss of a daughter. You deprived many nieces and nephews of an aunt. You eliminated a dear friend to so many others. But worst of all, you stole the mother of Mary Lee, Tabitha, James, Jeremiah William, and Sarah. Maya will always know what you did that night, but thankfully God has him and Sarah in the best place possible, where you will never be able to harm them again. They will always be safe. Thank God you are going where you can never harm another person. You are finally going to answer for all the evil, lying, cheating, stealing, cruel, and abusive things you have done. And you will still have to answer to God for your crimes and the broken commandments. You broke all of those commandments, and the worst being honored thy mother and thy father. They raised you as best they could on those commandments, and thou shalt not kill. You live while Tara doesn't. Why couldn't you just let her and the children go? Till death do you part. Yes. Tara, but Tara went to heaven because of you, whereas you will not.
She then asked Manel why he couldn't just let Tara and the children go. Tara's sister, Loretta Anderson, struggled to hold back tears as she said, "How can I have closure when this pain will be with me forever? You have taken from me a sister, and from my mother, a child. The worst thing is you have taken from your own children the most important of all of their bonds. You took away their mother. You brutally took her life with no remorse. I believe that after today, the only real closure is that Tara will no longer live in fear of you. She is at peace." Jeremiah had prepared a statement as well. He stood alongside a victim advocate as she read aloud his statement.
"Kids talk about how they love or hate their mother, but whenever they talk about their mother, I just want mine back. Sometimes I had to wake up and remember that my mother isn't here, and so I think you are right where you belong. You can't hurt her, me, or Sarah anymore."
Manel's father, Ed Manel, addressed his son. He said, "You didn't always see a godly example in me as a dad and as a husband. Me and Mom love you. I failed in a lot of ways, and I'm sorry for that." Manel was then asked if he had a statement for the court. He responded, "I came here to be sentenced, and I'm ready for that."
"When this defendant was convicted at trial, in response to specific questions found beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant committed this murder by his own hand, and that the murder was outrageously or wantonly vile, horrible, or inhumane, and that it involved torture, depravity of mind, or an aggravated assault upon Tara O'Shea. As such, the defendant shall be sentenced in accordance with 2C11-3B4, which statute requires the imposition of a sentence of life without the possibility of parole, which sentence shall be served in a maximum security prison. Good luck to you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Perry.
Thank you, Mr. Thank you, Judge.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Jeremiah Manel was sentenced to life in prison. For years, Tara O'Shea Watson had been used as a punching bag for Jeremiah Manel. For years, she had been attempting to get away from him. But it's common knowledge that the most dangerous time for a victim of domestic violence is when they try and leave their partner. Finally, in 2016, however, Tara had got the courage to kick Manel out. And he was seething. Well, besties, that is it for this episode of Morbidology. As always, thank you so, so much for listening. I'd also like to say a big, massive thank you to my amazing new Patreon supporter, Erica. The support on Patreon seriously goes such a long way, and I am eternally grateful. In exchange for your support, you get bonus episodes of Morbidology Plus that aren't on the regular podcast platforms, ad-free and early release episodes, behind the scenes, and more. If you'd like to support the show up on Patreon, the link is in the show notes. Also remember to check us out at morbidology.com for more information about this episode and to read our true crime articles. Until next time, take care of yourselves, stay safe, and have an amazing week.